This week on Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, we present a special Indigenous Peoples Day edition.
Indigenous peoples are on the front line of extractive industry.
These industries breed nothing but violence.
Indigenous people rally against fossil fuels during Climate Week in New York.
As Indigenous peoples, we know that large-scale manipulation of the earth is arrogant and not without consequence. Geoengineering is not a necessary evil, is the last effort of a capitalistic extraction-based economy.
Indigenous Environmental Network activists speak out against techno fixes and false climate solutions.
We were celebrating the victory that the Onate statue would not be erected here in Española, and one young man wearing a Make America Great Again hat came with the intention of taking a life.
An Indigenous activist is shot by a racist gunman in New Mexico during a celebration of a decision not to return to public view a statue of genocidal colonizer Juan de Oñate.
Every single day that Leonard Peltier sits in prison, this president walks on the Constitution.
Activists call on President Biden to grant clemency to American Indian Movement elder and political prisoner Leonard Peltier. From Pacifica Radio, this is Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm your host for today, Freddie Heredia. For generations, Native peoples across the hemisphere have rejected the myth that Christopher Columbus was a benevolent quote-unquote discoverer. In fact, Columbus's arrival unleashed a brutal genocide against countless of millions of Native peoples. For decades, Natives and non-Natives called for an Indigenous Peoples Day to replace the Columbus Day federal holiday. In 2021, rather belatedly, President Biden formally recognized Indigenous Peoples Day as a federal holiday. But Biden's recognition did not abolish Columbus Day. Instead, both now share the same federal holiday, the second Monday of October. Professor Emeritus Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, author of An Indigenous People's History of the United States, dissects the contradiction of celebrating Indigenous people and the notorious Native killer Christopher Columbus on the very same day.
I think it's important to know that ever since Franklin Roosevelt made it a federal holiday, Native people have spoken out against this, and it can be documented back into the 1940s. But especially in 1977, when Indigenous peoples of the Western Hemisphere went to the United Nations, to the Palais des Nations in Geneva, where the human rights bodies are located, and were welcomed there, 100 representatives. And one of the main demands they made, which finally became the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in 2007, was that October 12th be considered and named the International Day of Solidarity and Mourning with the Indigenous Peoples of the Americas. And I think that was when internationally and nationally that the real movement was set off. And of course, we had looming ahead of us the quincentenary of 1992, which Spain and the United States in particular teamed up to make a huge celebration worldwide. They failed miserably thanks to Native people mobilizing, not just in the Western Hemisphere, but really all over the world. So I think the developments at the UN with the Indigenous peoples going onto the world stage has really made this possible. But it will be a long struggle still. It's just not appropriate to celebrate Columbus and Indigenous peoples on the same day. It's a contradiction. One is a genocidal enslavement, is what Columbus represents. And the situation of Native people today, still under colonialism, with shrunken land bases and not true sovereignty is the fruit of that beginning. And they're completely contradictory. So it will, you know, would require an act of Congress, and that would be difficult. The Italian community and the Catholic Church would definitely oppose this. So we have really a long ways to go to make it real, but it's Indigenous People's Day, and it cannot be co-opted into tolerating Columbus being alongside it.
That was author and historian Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, author of Indigenous People's History of the United States, speaking on Democracy Now!
Years from now, my people will be forced to live in mobile homes on reservations. Your people will wear cardigans and drink highballs. We will sell our bracelets by the roadside. You will play golf and enjoy hot hors d'oeuvres. My people will have pain and degradation. Your people will have stick shifts. The gods of my tribe have spoken. They have said, do not trust the pilgrims.
That was The Hallucination, Burn Your Village to the Ground, Neon Natives Remix. Indigenous movements across the world are on the front lines of efforts to protect nature, preserve biodiversity, and defend Mother Earth. This past September 17th to the 24th, the UN Secretary General's Climate Ambition Summit was held in New York. It brought leaders from countries around the world and major world financial institutions to discuss climate issues. But there was also an alternative people's action in the streets of New York, as 75,000 people on September 17th called on Joe Biden to stop federal approvals of fossil fuel projects such as the Willow Project, a major oil development in Alaska, and the Mountain Valley Pipeline. They also called on Biden to phase out oil and gas drilling on public lands, declare climate change a national emergency, and to transition to a reliance on renewable energy. Here are some of the voices from the Indigenous stage of the rally.
Indigenous peoples are on the front line of extractive industry. Let's just soak that in right now, because you know what? We're only 5% of the population, and we're protecting 80%. Of the world's biodiversity. Right now in the Amazon, we're fighting against Marco Temporal. Marco Temporal is what the government wants to do to take away the demarcated lands of the indigenous peoples, because they've already taken all of the land that's not theirs. And what that will do is allow for genocide of indigenous peoples today, right now, so that they can extract their precious minerals and fossil fuels so that we can have these luxuries that we have here. Right now, this is happening. Right now, in the deserts, they are mining indigenous territories for our batteries, for our lithium batteries, for the nickel, cardamom, the gold. We need a more sustainable future, and we need to come together to make that happen. We need to keep these minerals in the ground, we need to keep this oil in the ground, and we need to work together to find some other way to do this.
Beautiful hello, my friends. My name is Amber Meredith. 2 years ago, I never imagined I'd find myself in this position, standing before so many of you. I still feel inadequate to speak on such matters compared to those who have come before me, those that inspire me. However, I owe it to my family from Seven Directions of Service and Team Danger from Power Coalition to bring attention to the battle they've all been fighting for the last decade. An atrocity that we now know as the Mountain Valley Pipeline and the Southgate Extension. a pipeline that is billions of dollars over budget and years behind schedule. A pipeline that was able to buy its way into must-pass legislation that had nothing to do with the federal budget. These industries breed nothing but violence. They contaminate our air so we can't breathe, our water so we can't drink, and our land so we get sick. The fossil fuel and other destructive extractive industries, along with their man camps, have been proven to have connections to the MMIP epidemic. The murdered, missing, and indigenous peoples epidemic steals our women, children, and two-spirit relatives from us at an alarming rate. These corporate politicians, these corrupt politicians, and their blind followers scream about how we need to protect the children. Well, here you have a child, my child, who is afraid of the future because of corporate greed. If children are our future, we should be investing in them and their dreams instead of selling their chance at life to fossil fuel corporations like the Mountain Valley Pipeline. Our children are watching us, and we should act accordingly. Stand up and fight back!
Those were voices of indigenous people at the Summit to End Fossil Fuel in New York City. Thanks to Jacqueline Batiste of KPFT, Pacifica Radio in Houston, Texas.
They call it a pipeline, but those on the front lines know that black snake was sent for us to grow, to shed the skin our ancestors pray of wounds old and calloused, so that we may stay, so that we may unite, unity our tool. No weapons are found in this court of rule. Men becoming ki'ai, steadfast in their guard, protecting women's hearts as their song become roots. Roots to cast out healing for all sentient beings. To honor sacred mother, heart forward we heal. The salmon will run, the mauna will breathe, the rivers will flow. The rainbow is here, and prophecy tells us all generations will hear.
Nations and our people that been living here for thousands of years.
Stand up.
We've been fighting for our freedom since the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria.
Stand up.
Like Geronimo, Sitting Bull, Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, Leonard Peltier.
Stand up.
Now they poison in the waters for our sons and our daughters, so we on the frontier.
We won.
One nation, one cause, one people, one tribe. Now it's us against the pipeline. Get on your feet for Standing Rock, and we'll show you how strong we could be when we unify.
To all my native people, recognize yourself, keep your head up. To all my tribal people, recognize yourself, keep your head up. To all my native people, to all the original people, to all my indigenous people, recognize yourself, keep your head up.
Stand up, stand up, stand up, stand up.
That was Stand Up, Standing Rock, No Dapple by Taboo, featuring Shailene Woodley. A counter event to the UN Climate Summit the week of September 17th was the New York City People's Climate Week. Speaking at a People's Climate Week teach-in at the New School was Panganga Pongo Wiyi, Indigenous Environmental Network's climate geoengineering organizer. She spoke on the long history of environmental injustice in indigenous communities, which includes forcing indigenous lands to become sacrifice zones.
Kuyakumsi. So Kuyakumsi means welcome, and it kind of has the same root word as Kuyakumkin. And Kuyakumkin means I'm glad for you, I'm happy for you. And to you I say Kuyakumkin, I'm so glad that you're here today to hear from our communities and to strategize with us. So if you were here yesterday, you know that I come from a land with a history of peoples who have always had things done to us, on us, and for us without our permissions. Experimenting and poisoning by the military and government, we live in a cancer cluster and are considered some of the most polluted people in the world in the Arctic. And now the testing of geoengineering is being attempted by the academic institutions and private industry, driven and backed by billionaires and fossil fuel interests. Arctic Ice Project started by Leslie Fields, who has worked for decades for Chevron and HP, has spread football fields worth of unnatural hazardous silica over the tundra for multiple seasons without our knowledge or consent. They plan to spread this over 100,000 square kilometers of the Arctic ice, and they claim this will help thicken the ice. We stood up and said no, and now they're finding other indigenous communities to continue this experimentation, including in Greenland and India. Scopex of Harvard University attempted to begin testing stratospheric aerosol injection, where sulfur dioxide will be sprayed into the stratosphere to block out the sun. They're pushing experiments on our Sami relatives, and they didn't know anything about it. So when we told them, and they said that it could devastate their people and their reindeer culture, they rise up to stop this experiment. Right now, off the coast of Alaska, a man named Russ George is attempting to dump tons of iron ore into the ocean, otherwise known as ocean fertilization. The last time this was done in 2012, the amount of people who were poisoned due to toxic algal blooms in my homelands of the subarctic increased dramatically in 2013. To geoengineering scams, we say no. And now they're talking about carbon capture and sequestration. It's being funded and incentivized by the government, billions of public funds subsidizing fossil fuel interests. And in Alaska, they are talking about making business deals with China, offering our land to sequester their carbon for profit. We know that carbon capture is not safe, nor is it effective. But even if it was, there's not even enough land in the world to use it at scale. But they will try and watch as they try, cutting into the biodiversity that our ancestors have fought and died to protect since 1492. As Indigenous peoples, we know that large-scale manipulation of the earth is arrogant and not without consequence. We have seen this happening since the Industrial Revolution, and it's called the burning of fossil fuels and mining. You cannot get out of a mess by doing the same thing in a different way. Or as my uncles would say, if you want to get out of a hole, stop digging. BIPOC communities and the Global South are treated as sacrifice zones for extractive industry, and that legacy is continued now as they test their greenwash techno fixes on our bodies, lands, waters, soil, and air. Geoengineering is not a necessary evil, as some of its pushers would try to convince you. Geoengineering is the last effort of a capitalistic extraction-based economy. If the corporations are funding efforts to consider blocking out the sun, dumping poison onto our ice, or treating our lands as storage facilities for sacrifice zones, that is an indication to me of desperation. They know that an extractive-based existence is not sustainable, and they are desperately clinging on to whatever it is they can grasp. So hold the line. Do not give in to fear-mongering and manipulation. We do not need to change Mother Earth anymore. We need to change how we are in relationship to her, to Father Sky, and to one another, and we need to keep fossil fuels in the ground.
That was Panganga Pongo Wiyi of the Indigenous Environmental Network speaking at the New School during Climate Week 2023.
Time traveler running faster, warrior is born, battle to be won, past trauma, future hurt. I'm a child of the dirt and I'm ready to give birth. Planting a dream, panting I breathe. Running towards the future with a handful of seeds. Stronger than greed, I am stronger than hate. I stand under the shades of trees planted so long ago. A product of ancestral love. I'm here because my elders dance in the sun. They would give it all up for us. And from day one, it was practiced like religion to prepare for the ones to come.
We are here to give all. You forgot love, you forgot truth, you forgot how to live for a time beyond you. It's not about you, it's not about you. It's about the song that is traveling through. It travels through time. Singers will die, but the song lives on through matrilineal lines.
We are here to give all our love to the ones unborn. We are here to give all our love to the ones unborn.
Open your eyes, open your heart, draining aquifers.
That was Lila June, Time Traveler. This is Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Freddy Heredia. On Monday, September 25th, the Red Nation, an organization of Native peoples, along with an alliance of community members, hosted a press conference in Española, New Mexico. The event was held to challenge county plans to restore to public view a statue of genocidal Spanish colonizer Juan de Oñate. The gathering was held outside the Rio Arriba County Administrative Building. Here is part of the press conference.
Yo soy hermano Luis Peña, y yo soy un hijo de aquí. Why are we here? We're here because this pedestal was created specifically for bringing Oñate out of hiding and back into the public eye on the public time. So one thing that I want to set the record straight is in 2020, when the alcalde Oñate statue was taken down, there was a right-wing militia group in Albuquerque by the name of the New Mexico Civil Guard, which were making threats on social media to come down and have an altercation with a couple of the activist groups that were present in Alcalde on that day. I reached out to Tocumas Campos and expressed my concern that these groups had already been out in the community antagonizing people, threatening violence among people, and I didn't want to see that come up to Alcalde. Tomas Campos then made the decision to remove the statue, and he accomplished exactly what he hoped he could accomplish, which was divert the attention of that right-wing militia group to not come up north. The statue was removed. There was a peaceful celebration. Everybody went home safe that day. Instead of counting it as a victory, Tomas Campos then went on record saying that he took the statue down because he was afraid people were going to vandalize it. And I'm here to set the record straight, that is not true. That statue was removed to prevent a violent group from coming into northern New Mexico with their machine guns and their attitudes towards the activists at the time. And look what happened. That same group stayed in Albuquerque that day and shot a man how many times? Eight times? Nine times. How many guns did they confiscate from that group? I saw a picture and there looked to be no less than 12 AR-15s, multiple handguns, and thousands of rounds of ammunition. I commend Tomas Campos for avoiding that conflict by removing the statue on that day and keeping it a peaceful celebration. Why he turned around and decided to state that he was removing it to protect the statue, I don't know. But shortly thereafter, they applied for about $5,000 in riot gear because they said the protesters were violent and that they were assaulting the police officers. Again, I'm here to set the record straight. That was not true. There are many of us here present today that were there at that action. So again, deflection seems to be a mechanism that these politicians use instead of addressing the real issues. So what are the real issues? Right now, fentanyl is ripping a fire through the valley. The unhoused are an unprecedented numbers. They've tried numerous times to shut down affordable housing, one of which they accomplished, and another time it was subverted. So you get this situation where you have one of the most impoverished counties and one of the most impoverished states in the nation, and you start removing affordable housing. You start having politicians that are not dealing with the fentanyl crisis that's occurring, and there's an uptick in human trafficking. And one of the things that was never, ever asked by any of the government or by any of the media following the actions in 2020 was, what did the red handprints on the obelisk and on the base of the Oñate statue represent? Not one of them asked what those red hands represented. I'm wearing a shirt today that represents missing and murdered indigenous women and relatives, of which we know that New Mexico is one of the highest states for rates of missing and murdered indigenous people. So people say, you know, and it's always the argument that people have, well, Black Lives Matter, well, all lives matter. Here's the thing, though. If indigenous women, children, and men are protected under those standards, we all are protected. Because here in the Norte, Chicanas and indigenous women are all facing the same levels of violence, are all facing issues around fentanyl abuse, are all facing access to affordable housing. And what does our government decide to do? They decide to get this statue that they had in hiding, build this pedestal, and now they're going to place it here as a show of their political power, I guess, from their perspective, but from my perspective, corruption.
My name is Alfonso Duran. I was born and raised in northern New Mexico, and I've lived in Española for over 70 years. I'm Oñate. All of us are Oñate. All of us that have Spanish blood. You can see some.
All right, let's clear something up. This is an issue that is falsely framed along racial lines. This is not natives versus Hispanos. That's ridiculous. You know why? Because I guarantee you that this man's ancestors were working the land alongside native people too. I guarantee you his great-great-grandparents weren't identifying as Hispano or Spanish or resonating with Oñate. I guarantee you. You know why? Because no sh- we're all mixed. Of course we are. But having quote unquote native blood or DNA is not what makes you native. We have our obligations in our pueblo. We have our own ceremonies to claim our own citizens. Okay? So it doesn't mean who your ancestors were, because we have our communities now with our standards and our practices and our ways of knowing that determine who we are and who our citizens are. So it doesn't mean that you're whatever percent Indian because the DNA test told you so. That doesn't mean anything at all. And this issue, again, is not one formed along racial boundaries. This is an issue of colonialism versus decolonization. This is about settler colonialism. Yeah. This is a fight against settler colonialism. And you better believe Native people themselves participate in settler colonialism. Of course I believe you have a Native friend who's okay with this Oñate crap. Of course I believe you have Native people who enable and uphold in your life these settler colonial narratives. Why? Because we're colonized people too. All of us are. Everybody in this valley. All of our ancestors were victims of U.S. settler colonialism. And what's wild is that when we're focusing on the clashes, we're totally detracting from all of the history where we were in solidarity together. Native people and Nuevo Mexicanos and Geniceros. We fought back at the Battle of Timayo against U.S. colonization. We fought back together at the Battle of Taos. Okay? There's so many instances where this has happened. To this day, every summer, Tewa women and Genicero women get together and we share seeds and we exchange knowledge about how to care for the land. This is about caring for the land that we all live on, that sustains us, that gives us life. This is a movement for life. Oñate represents the death drive. He represents the death drive of colonialism. He represents all of the sickness that we're still dealing with today, like Louise mentioned, the fentanyl overdoses, the violence against women and children. Oñate represents that rampant violence against women and children. The fact that domestic violence statistics for New Mexico are consistently through the roof and first in the nation. The fact that this is one of the worst states for welfare for children, but this is one of the worst states for education. That is because of Oñate. That is because of the legacy of violent Spanish colonialism. So this is not about who's from where or whose ancestors did what. This is about us learning how to be good relatives to each other and the land now, today, this day and age, for everybody's sake. Because guess what? All the work we do, all the work the Red Nation does, that Three Sisters does, that Breath of My Heart Birthplace does, it's for everybody here. It's for everybody. It's for the people who hate us. It's for the people who wish the worst upon us. It's for the people who actively try to harm us. It's for the people who are salivating at the idea of getting to harm us, okay? All of what we do benefits them too, because we are working from a place of love. That is what grounds our intentions, and we're fierce about it, and we do whatever it takes. When we say by any means necessary, we do mean any, okay? Let's make that clear.
right.
Oñate's never gonna come back. I'm gonna pass it on to our relative Ike.
My last name is De Vargas, and I don't stand for any kind of colonialism. If they're gonna put up the Oñate statue, they should at least put the true history so that everybody knows who that man was, so that the Chicanos, the Genizaros of this state and this country and this county know who the man was. Now, this man was taken out of here by the state, by the nation of Spain, and all his titles were taken away from him because of the brutality that he visited on the native people from here and on his own people. He was a brute to everybody. He didn't care. He didn't care if you were a Native American or one of his own people that he brought with him. He was a brute. Now, anybody that says that a conquistador was an honorable person, the very word conquistador is conquest.
Those were highlights from a community press conference in Española, New Mexico, where protesters called on Rio Arriba County officials not to restore a statue of Spanish colonizer Juan de Oñate. 3 days after the press conference, on September 28, 2023, community and organizers gathered on Tiwa territory for a peaceful, prayerful action celebrating the decision to postpone the return of the statue. The celebration was violently interrupted by an anti-Indigenous agitator. Diné activist Professor Melanie Yazzie provides details on the shooting.
An agitator opened fire on a prayerful celebration in Tewa territory, also known as Española, New Mexico, shortly after 12 p.m. local time on Thursday, September 28th. This was a premeditated act of violence. The agitator shot Jacob Johns, who was Hopi and Akamal Atham, in the torso. Johns was protecting a peaceful group of community members assembled at the Rio Arriba County Annex Building, along with a half a dozen other community peacekeepers. The gunman was heard saying, quote, "Let's do this," to a small group of men immediately before opening fire. At the time of the shooting, community members were celebrating a postponement of the reinstallation of a Juan de Oñate statue that was previously removed from its Alcalde, New Mexico location on June 15th of 2020. Rio Arriba County officials plan to reinstall the statue on Thursday morning in its new location in front of the county annex building, but postponed the reinstallation after community members and activists mounted pressure earlier in the week. News of the postponement came as a relief to organizers, who turned the planned peaceful protest into an impromptu peaceful celebration with speeches and a community feed. Before the shooting, the agitator was seen antagonizing the crowd, saying racist remarks, referring to attendees as, quote, Indians, and at one point proclaiming himself to be a follower of QAnon. The agitator also made a point to introduce himself to the media present and requested to be photographed and filmed. In the moments leading up to the shooting, the agitator attempted to approach the small crowd of mostly Indigenous women and children congregating around the event's speakers in front of the building's main entrance. Video evidence shows that Jacob Johns and other community peacekeepers successfully stopped the agitator from approaching the crowd. Eyewitnesses speculate that the shooter was trying to break through the crowd to shoot the speaker, or to jump on the cement pedestal to get a vantage point with the intent of carrying out a mass shooting. Video footage also shows that community peacekeepers did not pursue the agitator once they had successfully removed him to the other side of a wall separating the sidewalk from the complex. Despite this, the agitator reached under his sweatshirt with his right hand, drew a pistol, pointed, and shot one round into the crowd, hitting Johns in the torso. Additional ammunition was seen tucked into his belt by eyewitnesses and on camera. Eyewitnesses have confirmed that the agitator quickly adjusted his aim after shooting Johns and pulled the trigger a second time with the intention of shooting another attendee, but the gun jammed, preventing the release of further rounds. Upon realizing he could go no further with his planned attack, the shooter turned and fled into the complex's parking lot, got into his white Tesla, and sped off. Additionally, eyewitnesses report the shooter attempted to unjam his gun as he fled. The shooter was later apprehended 11 miles away by New Mexico State Police in Polewaukee, New Mexico. Despite Rio Oribe County citing concerns for, quote, public safety as the rationale for postponing the reinstallation, the county offered no protection for Indigenous community members on Thursday. In fact, Rio Oribe County and leaders at all levels of government were made well aware of the high possibility of gun violence and still did nothing.
Red Nation activist Jen Marley was present during the attack. Here she comments just after the shooting.
My name is Jennifer Marley, and today we witnessed a horrible thing, not unlike what we witnessed in 2020, when another white supremacist, Stephen Baca, went with the intention of taking a life. Today, we were celebrating the victory that the Onate statue would not be erected here in Española. We are at the Rio Oribe County Annex, and a small group of opposition showed up on this day to harass us, to violence us, and one young man wearing a Make America Great Again hat came with the intention of taking a life. Police watched as he jumped over a small wall, storming the crowd while I was speaking, and dozens of people jumped up to stop him. A man was shot at close range in the torso. He is now receiving medical care. From what I understand, the shooter was arrested in Pewaukee. This is exactly why we're here, because this violence is ongoing. It is not us who exacerbates it by declaring our freedom, by taking pride in our traditions, by expressing the deep love we have for each other in our community. We are not the antagonists. We are not the ones who incite this violence. We know exactly who does, and we know where their allegiance lies, and they should bear all the burden. We are here to protect our people. We are here because we love our people fiercely, and we will do whatever we can to protect them. I'm confident that we are still more powerful than their guns. We've always had a strength that they never will. Moments before this shooting happened, I said, settler fear is always valid. That was an act of fear. That was an act of cowardice. What we have is real strength. What we have is true power that existed before any of these settler institutions and will exist after. Children were here, children were present, elders were present. It was horrible to see my people crying and suffering. It's horrible to see something like this happen again. I hope this shows everybody watching that what we're dealing with is active settler colonialism. This is not in the past. This is happening today. They intend to take our lives. As you can see, we're surrounded by police now, are storming the place, even though they are directly responsible for allowing that shooter to commit this heinous act of violence. As far as I'm concerned, all of them are the shooter. As far as I'm concerned, all of them are Oñate. I hope that this reminds people that we have to fight harder. I hope this reminds people why we do this work. I hope this gets people up. I hope this gets people's eyes opened, because how many times does this have to happen for people to realize that the ongoing genocide, the murder, the rape, it affects all of us. No matter how away from it you stay, it doesn't matter if you're in a political organization, it doesn't matter if you go out to protest, that violence will come to you and find you. It'll come to you in your home. It'll come to you under the cover of night. That settler colonial violence is cowardly, and it does not respect us. We can be respectful all day. We can be graceful. We can be peaceful. This was an explicitly peaceful action. We weren't doing anything antagonistic. We weren't armed. We had prayers. We had words. We had signs and banners like we always have. And this is how they respond, settler vigilantes and police alike.
That was Jen Marley of the Red Nation.
We are the tribe that they cannot see. We live on an industrial reservation. We are the Halusa Nation. We have been called the Indians. We have been called Native American. We have been called hostile. We have been called pagan. We have been called militant. We have been called many names. We are the Haluza Nation. We are the human beings. The callers of names cannot see us, but we can see them. We are the Haluza Nation. Our DNA is of earth and sky. Our DNA is of past and future. We are the Haluza Nation. We are the evolution, the continuation. The Haluza Nation. The Haluza Nation.
That was the Haluza Nation. We are the Haluza Nation, featuring John Trudell and Northern Voice. You're listening to Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Freddy Heredia. We now turn to the case of Leonard Peltier, renowned American Indian Movement elder and political prisoner. In 1977, Peltier was unjustly sentenced to two life sentences following the shooting of two FBI agents. The agents died on June 26, 1975, during a confrontation when local, state, and federal police agencies invaded the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation to confront American Indian Movement activists. Former U.S. District Judge and Leonard Peltier's attorney, Kevin Sharp, spoke to Indian Country Today about the miscarriage of justice in Leonard's case and why he must be granted clemency.
We know that witnesses were intimidated. We know that witnesses were threatened. We know that affidavits, knowingly false affidavits, were submitted to the courts. We know that. We know that when the trial took place and the prosecutor said, "We only have this one piece of evidence, this shell casing. This ties Leonard to this shooting." We know now that they knew that wasn't true. And we only learned later, years later, after his conviction, that there had been a ballistics test that showed it wasn't his weapon. They knew that. If that happened today, those are known as Brady violations. If that happened today, is a new trial. What happened then is they changed their theory. Oh, okay. Well, we had said that he shot these agents, but in truth, and this is the government talking, not me, in truth, they say, we don't know who killed the agents. But we know Leonard was there. Okay, congratulations. There were 40 other people there with weapons. There were lots of other people there that day. There were 150 agents there. One of them killed Joe Stuntz, 21-year-old Native boy. We don't know who killed him. We know it was one of the agents, but they never went to figure it out. So those are the facts that we know. And if that case was tried today, there is no way it stands. We know, and I had never seen this in previous clemency petitions, we know one of the jurors was admitted bias against Native Americans. She said it, but we don't have to surmise it. They asked her and she said it. If that happened today, he gets a new trial. So it's those things that drive me crazy when I talk about, look, I believe in the Constitution. Those are all constitutional violations. We get a new trial. So, you know, those are the kind of facts that a lot of people don't know. And there's a lot of misinformation, you know, no, he shot these agents. Nobody says that, except for those people who weren't there. The United States government doesn't say that anymore. You know, and a lot of times the press will do this, and it's because you do have to look into it, but you'll get reporters saying convicted of murdering two FBI agents. No, he wasn't, because they had to drop that theory once it was discovered they hid the ballistics evidence to show that they knew he didn't do it. They dropped that theory and had aiding and abetting. It means he was there. And that's why even James Reynolds, who was the U.S. attorney on the case, not the first one, the second one, but he came in after the 76 elections. He came in and took over this case during the post-trial motion period and all the appeals and the habeas appeals. And that's why today James Reynolds says, we need to grant him clemency. We never could prove that Leonard Peltier committed a criminal offense that day. It's time for clemency.
That was Kevin Sharp, Leonard Peltier's attorney. Lakota historian Professor Nick Estes of the Red Nation offers further comments on the need to free Leonard Peltier.
We are here again in the belly of the beast, saying what we have said since 1978, that the FBI has waged a reign of terror against the American Indian movement and social movements who are fighting for freedom, for justice, and more importantly, treaty rights. This is not the seat of power in Indian country. Look around you, all our relatives that came from communities across the country. We have the wild Oglalas who are here. That is the heart of Ocheti Shalkoni territory. That is the seat of power for our nation, Ocheti Shalkoni. Not the White House, not Congress. That's why on January 6th, these guys came here because they thought this was the seat of power to try to take it. For us, our seat of power is the land, the water, the air. That's what Leonard Peltier was defending. This isn't some kind of spiritual, mystical, esoteric thing either. The United States government, when it drafted its constitution, recognized the military and social power of American Indian nations and put in its constitution that treaties are the supreme law of the land because of that power. Every treaty they signed with us had the same power as the U.S. Constitution. The same power as the U.S. Constitution. So every single day that Leonard Peltier sits in prison, this president walks on the Constitution. The president before him steps on the Constitution. And we are told that is a sacred document. How are we to look to people who treat their sacred documents, their sacred word, in such a manner? All Leonard Peltier was fighting for is the future of our people as indigenous people, because they tried to take that away with boarding schools. They tried to erase our children. It's not just about taking them and making them speak English. When you steal youth, you try to steal the future of indigenous nations. In 1972, the American Indian Movement came, almost 50 years ago, came to this area and took over the Bureau of Indian Affairs to make a stand. But they realized that these guys aren't gonna do anything, that the real seat of power lies back in the communities like Pine Ridge. That's why they went back. That's why the FBI went out there. If we want to talk about the FBI family vendetta that has been waged against the American Indian Movement and Leonard Peltier, we have to go back to one of the poorest places in this country. Why is it that Lakota people, why is it that indigenous people represent such a threat that they're willing to walk on their own constitution and keep an elder in prison? Why is it? Look at Standing Rock. That's why. Because it was not just us. It was not just Ocheti Shalkoni who was out there. It was our Wasichu brothers and sisters. It was our Black brothers and sisters. It was people of all walks of life who understood that Native people aren't special in our relationship to water. Because pretty soon, that's going to be threatened for us too. This isn't just an Indian issue. This isn't just an Indian problem. This is everybody's problem. And it's important that all of you step up and do what's right. I'm tired of waiting on people who sit in the so-called seat of power to exercise a sliver of humanity. Because You represent a greater humanity, a greater power, one that is guided by morals and principles that come from the land itself. And that's what we recognize with the freedom of Leonard Peltier. It's gonna happen, but that victory is gonna lie with you, those who've kept the dream alive. Leonard Peltier prayed, he had those visions at Sundance. This is the dream. This is the dream of our ancestors to be here, that we say we don't forget our ancestors. We don't forget our relatives. All those children who are buried, we're not gonna forget them either. We're coming for it all.
That was Nick Estes speaking at a rally in Washington, D.C. on Leonard Peltier's 79th birthday. In advance of Indigenous Peoples Day, even some congressional representatives have called for Leonard's release. House Natural Resources Committee ranking member Raul M. Grijalva, Democrat from Arizona, on Friday, October 6, presented a bipartisan, bicameral letter signed by 33 members of Congress to President Joe Biden requesting clemency or compassionate release for Leonard Peltier, who has been imprisoned for nearly 50 years. That was Sacrifice from The Underworld of Red Boy by Robbie Robertson, featuring the voice of Leonard Peltier. Robertson made his transition on August 9th, 2023. He had just finished scoring Martin Scorsese's upcoming film, Flower Moon. And that concludes today's edition of Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by the Capitalism, Race, and Democracy Collective with contributions from Jacqueline Batiste, Bolina Vasiliev, Steve Zeltzer, Akua Holt, and your host, Freddy Heredia. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, capitalismraceanddemocracy.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. Follow us on Twitter at PacificaCRD. Thanks for listening.